Okay, I'm going to be reading from John 11, 32 to 44. Then when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him and she fell down at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, Where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, See how he loved him. And some said, Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and the stone lay against it. Jesus said, Take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there is a stench, for he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who are standing here, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. Now, when he said these things, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth! And he who had died came out bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, Loose him and let him go.
Jesus was always getting into trouble. Now, he wasn't some upstanding citizen or do-gooder. You know those people that no one ever has a bad word to say about them. But when we read the Gospels, we see that Jesus was always getting into trouble with the religious elite. And there are four places in John where they are trying to kill Jesus. There's John 5, when he placed himself above the Pharisees' level of authority, when he heals on the Sabbath. Remember the man who had been an invalid for 38 years? Jesus said to him, Get up. And then there's when Jesus calls himself by God's name in John chapter 8, before Abraham was, I am. And in John 10, which some of us may have read during the week, again, Jesus refers to himself as being God. And again, Judeans pick up stones with the intent to kill. And the aftermath of today's passage, again, has Jesus with a target on his back, a bounty on his head. Jesus had real enemies. He didn't have the kind of enemies who just talked behind his back. He wasn't a victim of social media bullying by keyboard warriors. He had real enemies. People were trying to kill him. And he was always on the run for his life, it seems. As a prophet, he called out the hypocrisy and the injustice of the rich and powerful ruling elites. He broke their rules. And we saw this last week, although we didn't focus on that particularly. But after the blind man washed Jesus' spit and mud out of his eyes and goes back home seeing for the first time, his neighbors and others who knew him bring him to the Pharisees. Even though it was obvious that Jesus was the one who performed this amazing miracle, this life-giving miracle, there was one to really celebrate about. The Pharisees say, it's the Sabbath. Jesus can't be from God because he has done this work on the Sabbath. And so instead of rejoicing and praising God, they investigate and interrogate the man and his parents. We've been looking at John's Gospel for the last couple of months, and today is the seventh and final sign, which points to Jesus, who is the defeater of death. As I said earlier, we're going to continue to look at this Gospel, according to John, as we journey through Palm Sunday and into Holy Week. And I know I've said this many times, but just to briefly repeat it again, that we are carefully going through this gospel and being open to the Spirit to transform us and guide us as a church family in Hackham. And the final sign here today happens after Jesus is on the run. He has been performing these amazing signs, producing wine from water to keep the party going and to save people from shame and embarrassment. He has healed a boy on his deathbed as the word of God sent to heal us. He has healed a lame man by a pool as the one who is doing the work of the Father now. He has multiplied five small loaves of bread and two small fish to feed 15 to 20,000 people as the bread of life who gives in abundance. He has walked on the sea as the Lord of all. And he has given sight to a blind man as the sent one who is the light of the world. But now, again, he is on the run. Jesus has said that he and the Father are one. The Father is in Jesus and he is in the Father. And these comments have caused his Jewish opponents to pick up stones to kill him. They try to grab him, but Jesus escapes and goes back across the Jordan. And he stays there, and many people believe in him while he is living in seclusion. A day's walk away in Bethany, just outside Jerusalem, are three siblings who are friends of Jesus: Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Jesus gets word that Lazarus is sick, and after waiting 2 days before deciding to head to Bethany, his disciples are cautious about going because Jesus' life is in danger. Their lives are in danger. And like many people, some of us can relate to this. Jesus misses seeing his friend before he dies. And this happens a lot today, but this happened a lot in ancient times. By the time the message got to someone, the person had already died. Now, obviously, these were the days before text messaging and even express post. And it would have taken a few hours, or maybe around half a day, for the messengers to get to Jesus. In the ancient world, some people had the job as being a messenger. And the key job requirement was that you had to be really fast at running and really fit to do this over potentially long distances. But it would still take quite a while compared to our modern ways of sending and receiving urgent messages. After receiving this message, Jesus waits 2 days before them making the long journey to Bethany. And so when he arrives at the edge of town, he finds out that Lazarus has been in his tomb for 4 days. He's been dead for 4 days. Now here's Jesus. While he's in seclusion, he's doing the work of the Father. He is healing. He's transforming liquids. He is multiplying food. But he is also on the run for his life. And then he discovers that he has missed seeing his friend before he dies. And as he physically enters into this town that is grieving, he also enters into their emotional grief. Recent studies have noticed that there are 5 stages of grief. And they can be in different orders, but they are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And I'm sure many, if not all of us, have experienced these in our lives. We have all lost people close to us. And sometimes we might keep this to ourselves, and there might be someone that you have lost who you only share the news with close family and friends. And even some of us among us here today may not know what each of us have gone through. But we learn from today's passage that Jesus knows. And he enters into our grief, for he has experienced this himself. Mary and Martha are surrounded by friends, and they are all weeping and comforting each other. And then Martha hears that Jesus has finally arrived, and so she runs out to meet him. And she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus says to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answers, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. In the Jewish belief at the time, there is the hope that right at the end of time, on the last day, God will raise up all his people. But Jesus knows that he has come into the world to bring that hope of the last day to the present. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. And Martha confesses her faith that she believes that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. She then goes back inside and calls her sister Mary aside, telling her that Jesus has arrived and he wants to speak with her. So Mary now gets up quickly and rushes off to see Jesus. And she also says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now Jesus doesn't lecture her, counsel her, preach to her, or even offer a prayer. Instead, he enters into and joins with her sorrow and despair and weeping. Jesus knows that Lazarus will live again, that Mary's grief will end, that death would not have the final word. But he enters human grief and weeps anyway. He looks at Mary's face. He sees the tears and the muscles in her face that move about as she sobs. And Jesus looks around and he sees other people and their tears and the raw human emotion that is around. And he is deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Jesus asks where Lazarus is laying, and they invite him to come and see for himself. And it is here that we have the shortest verse in the Bible, but perhaps the most human response that Jesus ever has. He weeps. He bursts into tears. Until this moment, he had been deeply moved and troubled. But it is at this moment he bursts into tears. It hits home. The reality of Lazarus dying causes him to unleash his emotion publicly. And I'm sure we can all relate to this as well. It can take minutes, hours, or even days or weeks after first hearing the news of the death of a loved one. Jesus knows what it feels like to lose a close friend. And he also knows what it's like to lose a family member. For Joseph died at some point before his public ministry. But Jesus doesn't prevent death. In fact, he does something even greater. He makes the dead alive. And many people, including us, say things like, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? If God is real, if he is all-powerful and loving, couldn't he have stopped this from happening? And we can relate to Mary and Martha and others in this passage. But we also need to sense the response of Jesus entering into our lives, to be aware of his presence there, and to hear the words of Jesus as he says, take away the stone. Because this is a foreshadowing of the crucifixion of Jesus, of facing death and not fearing, of a tomb with a temporary stone. In verse 38, we heard that Jesus comes to Lazarus's tomb. And if you turn around again, it would have been behind me, but this morning it's on the back wall. This is believed to be the site of Lazarus's tomb, the inside of it. And later on, you can Google the tomb of Lazarus and you can see the entrance. That's a tourist attraction today. It's a small door-shaped hole in a wall in the street. But on this day, there's a stone in front of that entrance to the tomb, in front of the cave, as it's described. And Jesus says, "Take away the stone." Martha doesn't see the point of this. And she says, "But Master, there's a bad smell, a stench. It's the fourth day since he died." And Jesus says, "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see God's glory?" And so they take the stone away. And Jesus lifts up his eyes, says a prayer to his Father. And then he shouts, "Lazarus, come out!" And then Lazarus, still dressed in his grave clothes, walks out of the tomb. This sign is referenced in Fyodor Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, possibly one of the greatest works of literature, and it was written in Russia in the mid-1800s. And the novel tells of Raskolnikov, a young man living in extreme poverty, who commits a double murder. And the novel details how he struggles with his guilt and the consequences of his actions until he finally confesses of his crimes. Now, a key point in the story is when Raskolnikov sees a New Testament in someone's room and he asks them to read to him the story of the raising of Lazarus. And this young man, who is filled with guilt of what he has done, knows that he is as hopeless as a four-day dead man. And although he doesn't want to let on it publicly, he is wondering, is there hope for such a lost soul like me? And I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't read it and may want to, but this is a foreshadowing of the end of the novel, where this young man, Raskolnikov, has a resurrection of faith from being spiritually dead. After he confesses of his crime to the police, he is sent to prison, and while he is there, under his pillow is a New Testament. And it's the same one, the same New Testament that was read to him earlier from the passage of the raising of Lazarus. And the very end of the novel details how he doesn't open this New Testament straight away. But as he reaches under his pillow and takes hold of it, he thinks to himself that could this faith and belief be mine too? And there are many parallels in the story to the raising of Lazarus, and one of them is how Raskolnikov is always dressed in shabby clothing, and Lazarus is dead in the tomb with strips of linen on him. For in our state of poverty, when we are tied up and our faces are covered, when we are dead and all hope appears lost, Jesus calls out to us by name and raises us up. And this is true spiritually and physically, for he is the resurrection and the life. And those who believe in him will live even though they die. No matter what we have done, there is hope and there is life. The raising of Lazarus is a sign that Jesus is the defeater of death. That through Jesus there is enduring hope. When all seems lost, when all hope appears to have faded away, we remember the story of Lazarus, the story of Jesus, who is the resurrection and the life. He is the defeater of death. For those of us who have lost loved ones recently or long ago, for those who have wept and questioned, for those who have doubted and believed. For those who have committed unspeakable crimes. For those who have hurt others and spent years feeling guilt and shame. For those who feel spiritually dead, wrapped up in restricting clothes and covered. Jesus calls out to each and every one of us by name and tells us to come out and draw near to him because he has given us new life. And this sign isn't just pointing to a real historical encounter or the fact of resurrection, but it's also Jesus' defeat of death. Death is still present, but the sting has gone. Weeping is for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Jesus is with us as he joins us in our grief, past, present, and future. He puts his arm around us and weeps with us. He hears our questionings and our wondering. He is deeply moved and troubled, and he acts. He brings new life and hope in his name. I invite the musicians and singers to come forward as we prepare ourselves to sing our closing hymn. But I'm going to read from Romans chapter 8, verses 10 and 11, before we sing our closing hymn. And it says this: if Christ is in you, then even though your body is subject to death because of sin, the Spirit gives life because of righteousness. And if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of his Spirit who lives in you. Amen. Now, we'll close by singing of our living hope. Not an abstract idea or an optimistic outlook on life. It is a person, Jesus Christ, the defeater of death, the resurrection and the life, who brings new life to each and every one of us.